prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Today's edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking the day to take care of other client business. For all your gold and silver needs, call her toll-free at 1-800-375-4188. In the next hour, I'll be bringing you some opinions and commentary on the economic and political news of the day, Thursday, June 1st, 2023. Hello, world, and happy Say Something Nice Day. Yeah, purpose of this celebration is to counteract bullying and the general lack of civility and common courtesy that's growing among people in today's world. When we were young, many of us often heard from our parents or grandparents, hey, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. Well, one of the many reasons we were taught that is because once we say something that's not nice, we can't take it back, no matter how true we think the words might be. So hopefully the practice of saying something nice today will continue into all of tomorrow's. And so I say to you, have a great day, ladies and gentlemen. And with that, let's get to today's market report. Precious metal markets are all positive today. Gold up $15 plus, about 0.8% in the New York spot aftermarket, just shy of $1,979 an ounce. We have silver up 1.5%, $2,396. Platinum up a little over 1% at $1,015. And palladium up 2.5% at $1,431. Now, that kind of on the back of a another down day for the U.S. dollar. The U.S. DI, the index, is down about 0.75% today at 103.54. And, of course, in the Treasury market, All down today, all yields. 10-year yield 3.603. But the 3-month T-bill still at 5.39. Again, it was down today. In the 2-year at 4.34. Those inverted yield curves continuing to show recession. In other commodities, oil up today after hitting into the 60s. It's up about $2 today a barrel at $70.06. Natural gas down about 4.5%. 2.162. Gold futures, by the way, August futures, 1,996. So things trending upward for gold. In the paper markets, a little up and down today. We have the Dow Jones finishing up at 153 points, 33,062. NASDAQ up 166, 13,101. And the broader S&P 500 index up 41 points at 4,221. Most of the major markets across the globe were up earlier today, local time. And that, ladies and gentlemen, I think I got them all, bear with me. Yes. So that is today's DGS Coins Market Report, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Now, in other news, of course, veering away from a default crisis, the House overwhelmingly approved a debt ceiling package last night. The deal that President Biden and Speaker Kevin McCarthy negotiated is now headed to the Senate for what the Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says will be swift passage in a matter of days before a fast approaching deadline. Now, that hard-fought compromise pleased few in both parties, but lawmakers assessed in the end, in the House anyway, that it was better than the alternative, a devastating economic upheaval if they failed to act. Now, tensions ran high as hard-right Republicans refused the deal. But Biden and McCarthy assembled a bipartisan coalition to push the passage on a fairly robust 314-117 vote. McCarthy said afterward, "We did pretty dang good." Now, amid deep discontent from his fellow Republicans, who said their spending restrictions did not go far enough, McCarthy said it is only a first step. Biden, watching the tally from Colorado Springs, where he's scheduled to deliver the commencement address at the U.S. Air Force Academy, phoned McCarthy and other congressional leaders after the vote. In a statement, he called the outcome good news for the American people and the American economy. Well, time will tell. Washington is rushing after a long slog of debate to wrap up work on the debt ceiling package to ensure that the government can keep paying its, debt service and other bills and prevent financial upheaval, really, all across the globe. Next Monday, June 5th, is that X date, as it's known as, when the Treasury Department has said the U.S. would run short of money to pay all of its bills and risk a dangerous, possibly catastrophic default. Biden had been calling lawmakers directly to shore up backing. McCarthy worked to sell skeptical fellow Republicans, even fending off challenges to his speakership. A similar bipartisan effort from Democrats and Republicans will be needed in the Senate to overcome objections there. Overall, the 99-page bill would make some inroads into curbing the nation's deficits, as Republicans demanded. without rolling back Trump-era tax breaks to wealthy Americans and corporations, and as Biden had wanted. To pass it, both Biden and McCarthy counted on support from the political center, a rarity in divided Washington. The compromise package restricts spending for the next 2 years till after the next presidential election, literally suspending the debt ceiling into January 2025 while changing some policies. They include new work requirements for certain Americans age 50 to 54 who are receiving food aid and green lighting a controversial Appalachian natural gas line that many Democrats oppose, but will help embattled West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, who is in a big and tight reelection fight next year. The deal also bolsters funds for defense and veterans and cuts new money for IRS agents. Raising the nation's debt limit, which is now at $31.4 trillion, ensures that Treasury can borrow to pay already incurred debt. Actually, didn't raise the debt limit to a specific number. They suspended it for 2 years. Top GOP negotiator Garrett Graves of Louisiana said Republicans were fighting for budget cuts after the past years of extra pandemic spending. In the early days of the pandemic, and later with Biden's Inflation Reduction Act, with its historic investments paid for revenues coming from other places. But Republican Representative Chip Roy, a member of the Freedom Caucus, helping to lead the opposition, said, "My beef is that you cut a deal that shouldn't have been cut." Now, for the past few weeks, negotiators labored late into nights. to strike a deal with the White House, and for days, McCarthy has worked to build support among his skeptics. At one point, aides even wheeled in pizza at the Capitol the night before the vote as McCarthy walked Republicans through the details, also fielding questions and encouraging them not to lose sight of the bill's budget savings. Speakers faced a tough crowd. Cheered on by conservative senators and other outside groups, the hard right House Freedom Caucus lambasted the compromise as falling well short of the needed spending cuts, and they vowed to try and halt passage. A much larger conservative faction, the Republican Study Committee, declined to take a position. Even rank-and-file centrist conservatives were unsure, leaving McCarthy searching for votes from his slim Republican majority. Ominously, the conservatives warned of possibly trying to oust McCarthy as speaker over the compromise. One still influential Republican, former President Donald Trump, held his fire. "It is what it is," the great philosopher said of the deal in an interview with an Iowa radio host. House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries said it was now up to McCarthy to turn out the Republican votes in the 435-member chamber, where 218 votes are needed for approval. As the tally faltered on an afternoon procedural vote, Jeffries stood silently, raised his green voting card, signaling that Democrats would fill in the gap to ensure passage. And that they did, advancing the bill that hard-right Republicans, many from the Freedom Caucus, refused to back. Then in the final vote, which came hours later, Democrats again ensured passage, leading the tally as 71 Republicans bucked their majority and voted against it. Just as an aside, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office said the spending freeze and related restrictions in the package would reduce deficits by $1.5 trillion over the next 10 years. Certainly a goal for Republicans trying to rein in the nation's publicly held debt. Now, the labor market posted another month of surprising strength. As companies added jobs in May at a pace well above expectations, according to a monthly report from payroll processing firm ADP. Private sector employment, they say, increased by a seasonally adjusted 278,000 for May, well ahead of one consensus estimate for just 180,000, and even a bit lower than the downwardly revised 291K for April. May's increase took cumulative private sector payroll growth so far this year to just shy of 1.1 million people. The ADP report noted that the distribution of job gains was fragmented over the month, as increases were concentrated in leisure and hospitality, which added 208,000 positions, and natural resources and mining, which saw a gain of 94,000. Construction added another 64,000 jobs, but multiple other categories had declines, like manufacturing saw a drop of 48K, financial activities lost 35K, and education and health services off by 29K. From a size perspective, companies with 500 or more workers lost 106,000 jobs. Smaller firms with fewer than 50 added 235,000. And the difference, of course, was companies with 51 to 499 employees. Now, one area of note in the ADP report was a slowdown in the pace of wage gains, with annual pay still up 6.5% in May, but down from the 6.7% increase in April. Those switching jobs reported an annual increase of 12.1%. In May. That's off a percentage point from the month before. Now, Neela Richardson, ADP chief economist, says that this is the second month we've seen a full percentage point decline in pay for job changers. Pay growth is now slowing substantially, with wage-driven inflation maybe being less of a concern for the economy despite all the robust hiring. The ADP count comes a day ahead of the Labor Department's more closely watched non-farm payrolls report, which is expected to show job growth of 190,000 following a larger 253,000 gain in April. Now, these payroll gains have come despite the Fed's efforts to tackle inflation and slow the labor market through a series of interest rate increases. Several Fed officials have said in recent days that they may be in favor of skipping another hike in 2 weeks as they weigh the impact of policy tightening that began last March. We shall see. And of course, it's Jobless Claims Thursday. The number of Americans filing for initial unemployment benefits rose slightly last week, but remains at healthy levels that continue showing a strong job market. Application for jobless claims were 232,000 for the week ending May 27th. It's an increase of 2,000 from the previous week. Well, weekly claims numbers are considered a proxy for the number of initial layoffs. And the four-week moving average of claims, which flattens out some of that week-to-week volatility, fell by another 2,500 to 229,500. Since the pandemic surge of more than 20 million jobs, excuse me, not surge, it was a pandemic purge, of more than 20 million jobs 3 years ago, the economy has added jobs at a furious rate, and Americans have enjoyed unusual job security. And again, despite interest rates that have been rising for 15 months, roughly, and despite growing fears of a looming recession. Early May, the Fed raised its benchmark lending for the 10th time in a row, and Well, and it's bid to cool the economy and bring down this high inflation. Part of the Fed's goal is to cool the labor market, which still favors workers, though there have been some signs of weakness in recent months. Hey, I hear that good Motown jive. It means we're headed for a break. Stick around. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you.
And welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody off today taking care of other client business. You know where to reach her at 1-800-375-4188. Now, we mentioned earlier the May jobs report comes out tomorrow. Analysts are forecasting that employers added 188,000 jobs in May. Not a bad number, but certainly nowhere near the average monthly hiring gains over the past 3 years. In somewhat of a surprise, though, the government reported yesterday that job openings actually rose in April, with employers posting 10.1 million job openings. That's up, that's up from 9.7 mil in March and the most since January. Economists, in fact, had expected vacancies to slip below 9.5 million. Wednesday's job opening report, along with today's layoff data and tomorrow's job report, could help sway Fed officials one way or the other in terms of its next rate hike move on June 14th. You know, the Fed is hoping to achieve that elusive soft landing, lowering growth just enough to bring inflation under control without causing a recession. I think it may be too late for that, although I do see them keeping rates the same next 2 weeks. Economists, though, are skeptical. Many expect the country to enter a recession sometime later this year. Marks are hoping that, again, the Fed pauses rate hikes at its coming meeting As of late morning Eastern time today, Fed Fund futures traders at CME believe there's a 74% chance of a rate pause on the 14th, while 26% see another 25 basis point rate hike. Last week, the Commerce Department reported that the economy grew at a lackluster 1.3% annual rate in the first quarter as businesses, wary of an economic slowdown, trimmed their inventories. Manufacturing trended downward last month. Institute for Supply Management's Manufacturing Index was at 46.9% last month. The May figure was slightly lower than April's 47.1. As we say, readings above 50% in such diffusion indexes signify economic growth and vice versa. Farther an indicator is above or below 50%, the greater or smaller the rate of change, while April marked the sixth consecutive monthly contraction. Now, this is what it looks like when the bond market exhales huge day-to-day yield and price gyrations up and down. Talking about the Treasury, security market, bond market in general. Yields have plunged on U.S. Treasury securities set to mature immediately in the wake of the X date, or June 5th, when the government estimates it won't have enough cash on hand to pay all its obligations. For example, the yield on the T-bill due June 6th dove from a peak of nearly 7% a week ago to about 5.4 yesterday. That's according to the bond trading platform Tradeweb. That undid some of the sharp tumble in prices experienced over the past few weeks as investors avoided owning the government IOUs, potentially at the leading edge of a default if a deal to raise the debt ceiling wasn't reached. The House voted late yesterday, again, to approve a deal struck between President Biden and Speaker Kevin McCarthy, with the Senate expected to vote on the bill over the weekend. Thus, the collapse in yields on select short-term treasuries show that as far as the bond market is concerned, and as we've pointed out previously, markets weren't really that concerned. And the debt ceiling deal is pretty much done and dusted. Well, at least for the next 2 years. So it looks like we can all move on with our daily lives. The May jobs report hasn't even been released yet, but already Fed officials are signaling that it's willing to skip a rate hike in 2 weeks. As a result, again, as we mentioned earlier in the first segment, investors have all but now unwound their bets of a hike at the June 14th FOMC policy meeting. The Fed has consistently stressed that it would rely on incoming economic data to determine the pace and frequency of rate hikes, an idea that appeared to put enormous weight on the inner meeting data releases. Last week's hotter-than-expected inflation report, therefore, caused markets to start pricing in a June hike. Fed officials have put so much weight on these data releases, which tend to be quite volatile and can be revised significantly from month to month or even week to week. That's according to Greg Dako, who's the chief economist at EY Parthenon. He says that means there can be significant swings in market pricing and market expectations, which could entail a potential rapid tightening of financial conditions that may not necessarily be what's desired by the Fed or optimal for the economy. Comments from a top Fed official ahead of tomorrow's job report suggest that officials indeed may hold off at the upcoming meeting, removing the pressure to read too much into tomorrow's jobs data and the upcoming CPI report. Phil Jefferson, a Fed governor who was nominated to step up to the second-in-command position at the Fed, said this just yesterday. A decision to hold our policy rate constant at a coming meeting should not be interpreted to mean that we have reached the peak rate for this cycle. Indeed, skipping a rate hike at a coming meeting would allow the committee to see more data before making decisions about the extent of additional policy firming. I believe that would be a prudent move by the Fed. But their obsession for 2% inflation and a soft landing, I don't know. It really continues to be uncertain. In any event, Philadelphia Fed President Pat Harker said, I am in a camp increasingly coming into this meeting, June 14th, of thinking that we really should skip and not pause. Now, down the street in Washington, top White House economists are optimistic that the sticky inflation will be increasingly less so over the coming months as rapid wage growth continues to cool. The new analysis is part of an emerging consensus that the strong labor market is a key driver behind this inflation. If that's true, the job market might have to loosen up before prices can fall to a more comfortable / desirable level. Economists studying inflation tend to look at a narrow measure of price gains rather than the headline figures. White House analysis, for example, looks at the services sector that excludes housing, energy, and food costs. Fed Chair Jerome Powell has said this area is the most likely to see higher labor costs from the top job market, which may ultimately get passed on to consumers. The White House has identified parts of the service economy that are particularly sensitive to wages. Think daycare centers, auto repair shops, casinos, and more. While others, like health insurance, aren't so much. In the Fed's preferred inflation gauge, the core personal consumption's expenditure price index, that is excluding food and energy, rose 4.7% in the 12 months through April, down, I believe, from 4.9% the month before. Still more than twice the desired 2% level of the Fed. According to new calculations by the White House Council of Economic Advisors, now led by the former Fed Vice Chair Lyle Brainard, the wage-sensitive sectors accounted for a whopping 1.9 percentage points of that annual rise. Put another way, these sectors accounted for 41% of annual core inflation in April. A CEA blog post read, while the initial pandemic run-up in overall non-housing core services inflation was driven disproportionately by the wage-insensitive components, more recently, the vast majority is among wage-sensitive sectors. Yes, wages are still rising across the services side of the economy, though notably more slowly than in early 2022. In April, average hourly earnings in the non-housing core services rose just 4% from a year earlier. That's down more than 4 percentage points from the peak in January 2022. According to the CEA, that's a sign that inflation could cool even further in this sector in the coming months. The Biden economists find that price inflation lags wage growth in the most wage-sensitive sectors by 10 months. However, we underscore our uncertainty, the economists write, noting, among other things, that inflation in other sectors could reaccelerate just as it did earlier in the pandemic. Nothing's easy, ladies and gentlemen. Now, a hyped up tech sector is carrying the stock market once again. The S&P is up 8.9% so far this year, 9.7% including dividends. But the lion's share of that increase is due to the surging prices of just a few of the largest companies' share prices. the big five that are responsible for the vast majority of the stock market's 2023 gains are Apple, up 36% year-to-date, Microsoft, 37%, Google parent Alphabet, 39%, and Amazon, 44%. Not to mention current stock market darling NVIDIA, which has surged 159% this year on AI-related excitement. Now, without them, the overall market, including dividend payments, would be up just 1.5% this year. That's according to data provided by Howard Silverblatt at S&P Dow Jones. If you also remove the contributions from the two other largest tech companies, Meta, which is up 120% this year, and Tesla up 66%, the S&P would actually be slightly underwater for the year. The S&P 500, which is the most widely used gauge of the stock market, is a market cap weighted index, which means the companies with the biggest market caps have the biggest impact on how the overall index moves. And this year, they're up big, thanks to a backdrop of falling inflation, solid economic growth, that at least that's higher than had been expected, although 1.3 does not a solid economy make, plus a good old-fashioned high-tech hype hootenanny about emerging technology. Excuse me, AI. The flurry of excitement over generative AI has supercharged shares of Microsoft and Google parent Alphabet and NVIDIA, which have close ties to the technology. Meanwhile, Apple and Amazon's respective ROMs were driven largely by solid earnings that defied earlier expectations for a significant consumer slowdown. Now, these companies have also benefited from the typical tailwind that tech-centric growth companies catch when the market smells a pending shift away from rate hikes. On the other side, I mean, some see the dominance of the stock market by these few companies as a warning sign, warning that the market as a whole isn't actually doing that well, and of how vulnerable it is to any weakness among the big five. Or seven. The top five company share of the S&P index is incredibly large relative to history, but it's typical for a small number of companies to be the outsized drivers of most stock market gains. A few years ago, we remember the FANG stocks, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. In the late 1990s, the four horsemen, Microsoft, Cisco, Oracle, and Intel, led the market charge. In the late 60s and early 70s, it was the fast-growing Nifty 50. The bottom line, in any event, if paper investors hope to recover quickly from last year's ugly 19% downturn, it looks like fast-growing tech companies will be doing most of the heavy lifting. Now, the debt ceiling deal passed last night by the House imposes new work requirements on food insecure Americans who are in their early 50s in a move that has alarmed anti-hunger advocates. According to the CBO, however, the number of people eligible for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, formerly known as food stamps, will actually go up as a result of this deal. At the moment, work requirements are in place for able-bodied adults under the age of 50 who don't live with any dependent children. Under the new law, the age cap will be phased in to 54 after 2025. But a slew of exemptions will also be enacted. Adults under 54, including many under 50 who are covered by existing work requirements, will be exempted if they're veterans or are experiencing homelessness. Adults under 24 will also be exempted if they were in foster care when they turned 18. After 2025, when the new work requirements are in full effect, the CBO has determined that approximately 78,000 people would gain benefits in an average month on net. Now, while these new work requirements will save the government an estimated $6.5 billion between 2023 and 2033, the new exemptions will cost us about $6.8 billion over the same period. Hey, we're going to take it easy for a couple of minutes, entering another break. I hope you'll stick around. We have a third segment coming your way in just a few short minutes. You're listening to Financial Survival. Come on, baby. Don't say baby. I gotta know if your sweet love is gonna save me. We may lose and we may win, but we will never be here again. So open up.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, 1-800-375-4188. Hey, listen to this surprising news. After ballooning for years, looks like CEO pay growth is finally slowing. I didn't say CEO pay is getting any lower. It's just that the growth is perhaps getting a little slower. Typical compensation package for chief executives who run S&P 500 companies rose just 0.9% last year, but to a medium of $14.8 million. That's according to data analyzed by Equilar. That means half the CEOs in the survey made more than $14.8 million and half made less. But it was the smallest increase since 2015. Still, that's unlikely to quell mounting criticism that CEO pay has become way too high. Plus, the imbalance between company bosses and rank-and-file workers way too wide. This content over that gap has helped fuel labor unrest, and even some institutional investors have pushed back against a few of the most eye-popping packages. Now, the smaller increase came after CEO pay soared 17% in 2021 when boards rewarded top executives handsomely for steering their companies through the pandemic-induced recession. Many of the compensation packages were approved early in 2022, but even a small raise might seem lavish in retrospect against the backdrop of a year where stock markets tanked to their worst since 2008. Inflation erased, you know, wage gains, fears of recession grew, and tech giants began laying off workers by the tens of thousands. Sarah Anderson, who directs the Global Economy Project at the Institute for Policy Studies, said that what we shouldn't lose sight of is that CEO pay is still off the charts by historical measures, adding that even a small hike last year was outrageous. Now, in contrast to recent years, CEO pay gains were lower than the 5.1 increase in wage and benefits netted by private sector workers, all workers, through 2022. Still, worker pay failed to keep up with inflation, which was sitting at 6.4% at the end of 2022. And the pay disparity between CEOs and rank and file workers, which has been widening for years, narrowed only slightly. For example, the median pay for workers at companies included in this survey was $77,200, up a little over 1% from $76,160 the previous year. And that means it would take that worker, that rank and file, average rank and file worker, 186 years to make what the CEO making the median pay earned just last year. At the same group of companies in 2021, it would have taken 190 years. So, hey, things are getting better. The timing of some of the biggest pay packages struck a harsh note against the backdrop of difficult time in certain industries. CEO of Google parent Alphabet, Sundar Pichai, ranked number one in this pay survey this year with a package valued at nearly $226 million. The vast majority of his comp came from a grant of restricted stock valued at $218 million, which Google grants to its CEOs every 3 years. The leader of Google won't reap most of the benefits of the stock awards right away, though, and how much he ultimately realizes depends on how Alphabet's stock performs over that time. Alphabet noted in its annual proxy filing that compared with Pichai's 2019 stock awards, a greater proportion of his latest batch will only vest if the company reaches specific goals for shareholder return. Even so, Pichai received a total comp package 15 times higher than this year's median CEO pay just before Google laid off tens of thousands of workers. In fact, the company's total shareholder returns fell 39% last year. Stephen McMurtry, a Google software engineer and a member of the Alphabet Workers Union, CWA, said, "The clear disparity between executive rewards and our jobless former coworkers erodes trust and further underscores the need for transparency." Now, let's look at UPS CEO Carol Tomei, who received a total package valued at about $19 million, most of it in stocks. Now, that's down 31% from 27.6 mil the year before because she didn't exceed performance targets by as much in 2022 as she did in 2021. Omi's pay was 364 times higher than the $52,100 median pay for all UPS workers, although the company notes that the average pay for its full-time drivers is $95,000. That must include an awful lot of holiday overtime. Apple CEO Tim Cook was number three in the survey with a comp package valued at $99.4 million, nearly identical to what he got in 2021. What else can we say here? Nothing more except execs are going to likely see steeper pay cuts this year when boards consider the full effect of the stock market's downturn. We shall see, and we'll keep reporting. As interesting news on the energy front, the world is set to add a record amount of renewable electricity capacity this year as governments and consumers seek to offset high energy prices and take advantage of a boom in solar power. It's according to a new report out today. The International Energy Agency said high prices from Russia's attack on Ukraine and concerns about the energy security had boosted the rollout of solar and wind power installations, which are expected to reach 440 gigawatts in 2023. That's about a third more than the world added the year before, taking the global installed capacity now to 4,500 gigs, roughly the combined total power output of the U.S. and China. About two-thirds of this year's increase in renewable power capacity will come from photovoltaic, with both large-scale solar farms and consumer rooftop installations seeing significant growth. Production of new wind farms is predicted to rebound after a period of low growth. However, in contrast to solar manufacturing, the supply chains for wind turbines aren't growing fast enough to meet demand. The IEA also cautioned that power grids must be upgraded and expanded to cope with the intermittent nature of solar and wind power. Why? Well, they require a fundamentally different approach by network operators compared with the existing coal, gas, or nuclear power plants. The report forecasts that several European countries like Spain, Germany, and Ireland will see wind and solar's combined share of their overall annual electricity generation top 40% by the end of 2024. Times, they appear to be changing. Now, next, China's government has criticized the U.S. plans to sign a trade treaty with Taiwan and called on Washington today to stop official contact with the self-ruled island democracy claimed by Beijing as part of its own. The agreement due to be signed today comes amid increased Chinese efforts to intimidate Taiwan by flying more fighter jets and bombers near the island, which is known as a global center for microchips and the high-tech industry in general. American and European politicians have visited Taiwan month after month in a show of support for its elected government. The Chinese foreign ministry accused Washington of violating agreements on the status of Taiwan, which split with the mainland in 1949 after a civil war. The U.S., in fact, has no official relations with Taiwan, but has extensive informal ties and a multi-billion dollar annual trade, much of it, by the way, in military weaponry. Chinese ministry spokesperson Mao Ning said the United States should stop any form of official exchanges with Taiwan, should refrain from negotiating agreements with Taiwan that have sovereign connotations or official nature, and refrain from sending wrong signals to Taiwan independent secessionist forces. Now, Taiwan has never been part of the People's Republic of China, but the mainland's ruling Communist Party says the island is obligated to unite with China by force, if necessary. Beijing has time and again threatened to attack if Taiwan declares formal independence or delays talks on unification. American and Taiwanese officials say the U.S.-Taiwan Initiative on 21st Century Trade will increase trade by simplifying customs, investment, and other rules. It's due to be signed by employees of the unofficial entities that represent the two governments to each other at a ceremony attended by trade officials from both sides. As Melody and I told you a few weeks ago on the show, when IBM CEO Arvind Krishna announced a hiring pause earlier this month, he also warned, I should say last month now, he also warned that the company plans to replace 8,000 jobs with AI, artificial intelligence. The transition will happen gradually, they say, over the next few years, with machines potentially taking up to 30% of non-customer-facing roles in those 5 years. This means that workers in finance, accounting, HR, and other areas will likely find themselves facing stiff competition from robots and algorithms. Ah, the new normal. This decision highlights the increasing reliance on automation and AI across various sectors, and more importantly, the potential impact on the American workforce. Well, workforce all around the globe, for that matter. It's not the first time IBM has made headlines for cutting jobs. Earlier this year, it also announced that it'd be slashing just close to 4,000 jobs, indicating a larger trend toward automation and other cost-cutting measures. While IBM isn't the only tech giant to downsize recently, with layoffs also hitting, as we mentioned, Meta, Amazon, Twitter, Microsoft, it's clear that AI is rapidly on the verge of transforming the workforce, and not all in good ways. The writing has been on the wall for some time, with experts sounding the alarm about AI's potential to replace human workers for decades. This trend is not gone on notice by policymakers, with the White House releasing a report in December warning that it's inevitable that some workers will be replaced by AI in the coming years. Krishna himself remains bullish about the prospects of AI in his workplace, pointing to the technology's ability to free up thousands of hours of labor-intensive tasks in areas like finance, accounting, and again, HR. He also projected that AI will add a staggering $16 trillion to the global economy by 2030. The prospect of mass automation, well, it looms large. There's a new report by too-big-to-fail bank economists reveals that up to 300 million full-time jobs worldwide could be affected by the latest wave of AI technology. 300 million jobs. Think about that. The report suggests that 18% of all work around the globe could potentially be replaced by machines, with the most advanced economies, like in the U.S., being hit the hardest. And this news signals a major shift in the way companies are operating in the digital age. And it's likely that this is only the beginning. Okay, so AI may be increasing efficiency. They certainly will define this post-pandemic new normal. It's not looking too good for us working stiffs. Hey, all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody back tomorrow with Butch to close out the week. Also be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes in the morning. Thanks as always to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.